Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Pacifica National Board's Audit Committee. It's Tuesday, October 14th. Thank you very much for joining us. I also first like to thank the committee for completing 100% of its work, which is to choose an external auditor, and we did. It's PMB Helen Donovan, and the partner is Tony Pohl. I'd like to thank the committee for that. And also, thanks to all the folks from Texas who are on the call with us constantly through the thick and thin. They're always here. And to all the other members who also are here through thick and thin, but they have not gone through what our fellow members from APST have gone through. And as usual, I always ask for your support. Thank you very much. Madam Secretary, could you please call the roll? The meeting is now called to order.
Tia Bidiaka.
Present.
Carolyn Burden.
Present.
Jeff Goldberg.
This is Stacy. I just came in.
Jeff Dick.
Hello?
Lisa okay, Davis.
Present.
Ambrose Lane. Evelyn Buffoon. Evelyn!
Susan?
I'm present. Did you hear me, Susan?
Nope. I got you now.
Okay,
Susan?
Yes.
Susan?
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Stacy Davis.
Okay. Stacy, gotcha.
Compound one, right?
Okay.
I think so.
Yes.
Susan Young, I'm... Tracy Rosenberg.
Present.
Andrea Turner. Joe Manzala. Jack Van Aken.
Present.
Don Casey O'Brien. Donna Warren. Madam Chair, we have quorum.
Okay, thank you very much, Susan. And for the listening public, the first item on the agenda is call to order and roll call. 5 minutes. 2, approved minutes, 10 minutes. 3, forensic audit discussion, 10 minutes. Whistleblower policy and procedure, 60 minutes. 5, next meeting date, 5 minutes, and adjourn. Could I get a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
Any objection to approving the agenda? 3, 2, 1. Okay, thank you. The next item is approval of minutes. Do we have any minutes, Susan?
I didn't know them. I was not secretary for the last couple of meetings.
Not a problem.
Right,
okay. And Lisa was kind enough to step in, and they're not
right.
ready, right? Okay.
Yes.
Not a problem. Not a problem. So we'll just go straight to our forensic audit discussion. Susan, I'm going to ask you to take the lead on this discussion, just to lay out for us why you think we need to have this done and what is it that we hope to accomplish from this.
Okay. My understanding is that one of the action items that was adopted by that was recommended by the Finance Committee and adopted by the PNB was to conduct not only the regular annual financial audit, but also a forensic audit in order to look back over perhaps a longer period of time and to look more deeply into the question of confidence in the financial information and deficiencies in financial controls. The last audit had extensive management, inadequacies of financial controls that suggested a pretty high level lack of confidence. And so my understanding is that that was a recommendation brought forward by the Finance Committee and adopted by the PNB. My question is, what committee is taking responsibility for proceeding with that?
Okay. That was brought up, and some of the current directors that are here, if you'd like to speak, I will take a stack on that. That did come up. We also, it was looked into by the chair of the national board, and it was quite expensive. Also, in that financial discussion on the National Finance Committee, was basically that the foundation, right now we are going through some rocky times, and we can only afford to do what is necessary in terms of keeping the foundation afloat. That said, we don't have any money to do a forensic audit. A forensic audit is when there is some suspicion of fraud. That, to my knowledge, I don't know, Susan, if someone has told you that there is some suspicion of fraud. I have not heard it. That's when you do a forensic audit. If you are talking about an operational audit, that is something different. A forensic audit is quite expensive. There was one station that wanted to do an operational audit about a year ago.
This is Stacy, yeah. And I'd like to be on the stack.
Oh, sure, yeah. One station wanted to do an operational audit about a year ago, and for that station alone, it was a cost of $20,000 to do that. So it is quite expensive. I'll take a stack. Stacy?
A point of information, please.
Yes?
What was the station that wanted to do an operational audit?
That I will not say it on the live stream, Carolyn. It's just that we just want you to have to trust me that is.
Did we do it? Did they do it? Actually?
Yeah. No, there's no money.
So it was not done. The station itself wanted it, and it was not done. Okay, thank you.
I will put you on the stack, Carolyn. You want to stack F, Stacy?
That never works. This is Dot. Can I get on the stack, please, Mia?
Okay, Stacy. Okay, Stacy?
And may I get on the stack? May I get on the stack as well? Thank you.
Okay. Let me just go. Stacy, Evelyn, Carolyn, and Lisa, right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Stacy.
Yeah, I just want to take issue with what you said about there not being any allegations of fraud. I've heard several allegations of fraud being bandied around Pacifica, and I think it would be wrong for us to ignore them. That's all I have.
Okay. We are the audit committee, so what I will do, I am going to give notice at this meeting that our next meeting, which we will do promptly within the next 7 days, we are the whistleblowing committee of the foundation. The moment you mention that word, that we are to immediately address that. I'm giving notice to everyone on this call that within 7 days, you come prepared with that information. Okay, Stacy? That's our responsibility, if you know of allegations of fraud. Is that fair? Hello?
I'm not personally making any allegations, but I definitely wouldn't say no one's implying that there's been fraud, because I've heard several people imply that.
Okay. Well,
if I need to investigate it further, I mean, I don't know that I can do that. I think the only way that you really know is the only way you really know is to do an audit.
No, you have to have written proof. Okay, but we will get into that with the next item. So if you are you agreeing that we should meet next week and you will come with documented proof of this? Hello?
No, I do not.
Okay. Evelyn?
Okay, I'm going to mute now.
Okay. Evelyn?
Okay, a couple of things. There will always be rumors and rumors of rumors. If no one is willing to put something in writing and put forth a formal complaints. We can't chase down every little time somebody gets pissed off and says they think that there is fraud. There is a system and a process, and this is not, we're not into witch hunting and all of that. So if no one's willing to put their name to a piece of paper and say, I'm filing a formal complaint and write it down, that's not something that we can chase. And that's, you know, I say this all the time. If that's what you think, write it down and put in a formal complaint. Don't just throw rumors and innuendo out there because you don't like somebody or you don't like the way they do stuff. And people don't do that. They don't submit their complaints in writing. They'd rather send it through the internet as some kind of, you know, what if. The other thing is, on the forensic audit, if we decide that it's something that's necessary, it is very costly, but if we decide that it's something necessary, we should put together the parameters and ask for bid, because that way we have an opportunity to try to get what we need at a cost that, you know, is reasonable. And at this point, we really don't have the funds for it, but we may be at a point where it's a necessary part of doing business.
Okay, thank you. Could I have the body's consent to suspend the rules? We have 2 minutes left in this discussion, and I have Carolyn and Lisa. Could I just suspend the rules to have Carol and Lisa speak, and then we close the discussion? Or if you want to extend time, you do that?
No objection to suspending the rules from me.
Carolyn?
I'm sorry, which rules are you suspending?
We have 2 minutes left. In order for you and Lisa to speak, I'm asking to just suspend the rules so you both could speak, because there are only 2 minutes left in the 10 minutes.
Oh, all right. I was just asked to extend for 5 minutes, but either way, it's fine. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. It's your turn.
Well, I'm questioning the cost. There have been some allegations floating around, and maybe people have not put them in writing, so maybe we need to track those down and get them there. But I'm also wondering if this committee is the proper place to deal with the question of a forensic audit, if that should not be the entire PNB, because in one sense, a forensic audit questions the validity of a regular audit, and I'm just wondering if maybe the whole question of a forensic audit should not be dealt with by the larger PNB rather than a committee. I'm just putting out there as a question. I really don't know the answer, but I'm questioning.
Well, I can answer you. Okay. In all organizations, the way it's supposed to work is, like I said earlier, the audit committee at any profit or not-for-profit is the whistleblowing committee of the organization. Whenever there's a complaint, it's supposed to come to us first, and we're supposed to investigate it. That's the way it's supposed to work. We're supposed to be independent of the board of directors. We're supposed to investigate the allegation, put the fact finding together, and say, look, this is what it is, and this is what we recommend. That's the way normal organizations function. I know we do things a little bit differently here at Pacifica, and I'm not criticizing the organization. However, I will not perpetuate something that is not what is supposed to be done. That's why I specifically said to Stacy, if there are these allegations, I will be willing to convene a meeting immediately within 7 days, and everyone comes with his or her complaint, and we will look into them. So I'm not overlooking them, but if you have documented proof, and as Evelyn said, it's not a witch hunt, we're not going to do hearsay and innuendo, we're very busy, and we don't have that kind of time to do that. So if anyone has anything, this is the place to come to us. We will investigate, we will come up with the truth, I didn't say facts, I said the truth, and then we'll make a recommendation to the Pacifica National Board. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Well, I would, if I may...
Okay, just one more, then it's Lisa.
Sure.
Go ahead. Carolyn?
Yeah, I would just say that the audit proposal that you put forward, the whistleblower complaint proposal that's on the agenda, the whistleblower policy,
Yes.
That really contravenes what you just said, because in effect it limits the directors and the members of the board and limits their ability to put forward complaints. It really constrains them. I think it's somewhat contrary to the California Code, as well as our own bylaws and perhaps the First Amendment. But I'm thinking that those two things don't go together. Either we have the freedom to investigate completely, or we don't. And if we're going to start constraining directors and members and say you can't do this and you can't do that, then this is the wrong committee to deal with whistleblower complaints. Then it has to go outside the committee. I don't think those two things are compatible. Perhaps we can deal with it when we get to the whistleblower policy, but that's just my thought on what we're doing here.
Okay, Carolyn, you'll be the first on the stack for that, for item number four. You find the line and the page and so forth, and the moment that we get to that, you point that out to me, okay? So you might want to look for it in the meantime. See what's contradictory.
Yeah, well, I thought I just made the basic principle clear. If you want to do a word-by-word, line-by-line analysis, we can do that too, but that's my thought on where... On how this committee, what this committee's mandate is and how it functions and where it should be going from here. Thank you.
Okay. Is that?
First of all, I just want to say ditto to what Evelyn said, except to just add one thing, and we'll be talking about this in the whistleblower policy, that it looks like, from what I can read, that there will be, the people will also be able to, if they want to submit a complaint anonymously, that they'll be able to do that too, if I'm reading this correctly. Also, I just wanted to ask, just for those of us on the call and even some of those who are listening who do not have as extensive a financial background as some other people could have, could you just, again, just briefly explain the differences between some of the audits? I know you said something about a forensic audit and then there was an operational audit, and compared to what the regular audit is that gets done. And just one other question, was the forensic audit, were they referring to a forensic audit of Pacifica or just one station? We don't even have to say the station, but I was just trying to understand if they meant that. Okay, thank you.
I'll let Susan answer you, Lisa, because she's the one who brought the item to the agenda. Susan,
As you all know, I am not a member of the PNB board, and I am not a member of the PNB Finance Committee. Where in reports that our PNB representatives gave the board, we were told that one of the actions of the PNB was to call for a forensic audit. And I think that this may have followed through from recommendations of the ED. And that report, that information was given to the KPFT LSB. As you can tell from the fact that there are three KPFT LSB members on this audit committee, having a rigorous audit practice and getting to the bottom of some what appear to be very obvious financial management problems is a high priority to our station. So this was discussed again at our last local station board meeting, and the question came up to those of us serving on this audit committee about whether there was any forward motion on the PNB decision, an action we understood was taken, calling for a forensic audit. So the reason why I asked for this to be on the agenda is because our local station board wonders what the heck is happening with the issue.
Okay. So that's the answer. And in terms of the types of audits, Lisa, well, mm-hmm. all audits analyze historical information. Your regular audit analyzes historical information for the foundation from one particular year, from the beginning of one year end to the end of a fiscal year. For example, last year would be October 1st of 2007 to this year is September 30th. And what they do is in each category in the general ledger, they'll take samples of postings to make sure that things are being done, things are being posted correctly. They take the look at the inventory to make sure they have X number of CDs, X number of DVDs, as they said, that they've done when they did the internal audit of the foundation. So for example, your station is I. When Tony Polo come to I, there's an inventory list of all DVDs, all the books and so forth, right? So he would just say maybe 10. He would go looking for this. They say on that sheet that you have 10 books by Howard Zinn. When he goes and he looks, there should be 10 books by Howard Zinn.
Right, okay.
Look, make sure all the checks, if a check has been written by the business manager, they'll pull a GL, they'll look at the actual checks. If the GL says $4,000 and the check actually says $4,500, then you know something is going on. They take
Hello?
Yes?
I mean, it sounds like you're talking about, like a regular audit, like a yearly audit. We're talking about a forensic audit.
My question was that I asked what the I did ask her to explain the different kind of audit.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. I was going to say that.
Sorry.
Lisa asked four questions. One was answered, and I'm answering the other three. Okay, so that's your regular audit, those types of things that a regular audit does. In terms of the forensic audit, that's when someone says, look, Lisa Davis, we know, this is a hypothetical now, folks, please. Maybe I should, let me change that. Jane Doe, I understand, is stealing money from WXYZ, okay? We have to have proof of that. Then you do a forensic audit. That is looking for fraud. That's what a forensic audit does. That someone knows that there's fraud, and you're looking, is this really true? Did Jane Doe steal $40,000 from XYDFM? Okay? An operational audit, the person comes in, you know, for example, you're having financial difficulty. The person comes in and says, you know, well, on the, in the finance office, there are 10 people there, but I think you could really work with 6 or 7. You have 50 program directors in this particular station. We should have that luxury, right? I really think you could do with 2 in order to save money. That's an example of what the operational audit.
Oh, okay.
The internal audit, which is the regular audit as you describe it, and the forensic audits do. Now, that's just really a simple form. I'm sure Evelyn could probably give you more detail, but that's just the gist of what those three are. Okay? Is that clear,
Lisa?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Thank you.
Now, so everyone has spoken on that. Let's move to our main item, which is the whistleblower document, which just disappeared. Does everyone have his or her, Word doc of that?
Yeah, point of information, Nia, please.
Yeah.
Forensic audit discussion. So you're suggesting that if we want a forensic audit, we need to bring back evidence of items that should be investigated because they're questionable?
Yeah, you do. You have to have proof, Carolyn.
All right, is that on the agenda for the next meeting? A forensic audit,
When Stacy mentioned it, that she understands their allegations, again, this is my third time saying this, if you know of something, yes, I will immediately schedule a meeting in the next 7 days to address it. We have to address it if there is truth to it. So do you have something, Carolyn? Should I schedule a meeting 7 days from now? Carolyn? Hello?
Oh, sorry. Yes, I will look at my data and give you something that probably will have to go into executive session, but I'll certainly send it to you.
Absolutely, yeah, but just let me know. But remember, you have to give me 7 days' notice because a lot of us, you know, probably like yourself, every night this week I have a meeting.
And next week, too. Thank you.
I know. Exactly.
Good enough. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move on. So does everybody have his or her document?
Yes.
Okie dokie. All righty. So the title of this is the Pacifica Foundation, Parenthetic Foundation, Whistleblower Policy. Jack Van Aken was very good. He did his homework, and he sent us his edit in red, just like a true school teacher, right, Jack? And we have them. What I'm going to do, I'm going to let us take turns reading. I know it's a little boring, but for the audience, but this is what we have to do. They don't have the document in front of them. So in terms of, so let's see, 1, 2, 3. How many of us are here, Susan? 7?
7.
Evelyn? Evelyn?
Yes.
You're on mute. Could you take the first two, the general and the objectives, please, reading those?
Sure.
Let me just ask a question or a favor or whatever. I do not have Jack's suggested amendments. When those when you go through a part of this where he has made suggestions, Nia or Jack could bring those up at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
right.
Changes. There are only two, Susan. So whoever gets to them, you'll see them in red. If you just read what the draft says, and then what Jack suggested changes, and then if anybody has anything along the way, and I'll do the edits while we talk, okay, Susan? And then I'll just send it to you as an attachment. How is that?
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay, Evelyn, go ahead.
Okay. Pacifica Foundation whistleblower policy. General, the Pacifica Foundation, Foundation in parentheses, Code of Conduct, hereinafter referred to as the Code, requires directors, board members, paid and unpaid employees to observe high standards of business and personal ethics in the conduct of their duties and responsibilities. Employees and representatives of the organization must practice honesty and integrity in fulfilling their responsibilities and comply with all applicable laws and regulations.
Okay. Does anybody have anything that they would like to add there or subtract or?
Susan has a comma after board members.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Requires directors, board members. Yep.
Comma.
Okay. You have to forgive my eyes, folks. You know what kind of eyes I'm working with. Okay.
No problem.
I have it. What I'll do, Susan, I'll put them in bold so that when you get it, have it. Okay. Any comments, any concerns, anything aside from the comma?
Madam Chair, Lisa?
One second, Lisa. Carolyn?
No problem.
Carolyn? Compound
I'm
one?
I'm sorry, yes,
Okay. I said that I would put you first on the stack with your comments. It's obviously not in this section, right?
Obviously. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. All right. Lisa?
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if you wanted to add volunteers in here as well, only because I know at some stations, some stations refer to some people as unpaid staff, and then others they call them volunteers.
Yeah, it just seems folks like to be called unpaid employees. So I guess I'll put slash volunteers. How is that?
Right, I just know some stations they don't refer to them as that, but that's the only reason.
I like self-determination. Folks like to be called.
So do I. I support that as well.
Not a problem. So is it okay? These are unpaid employees / volunteers. That's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Tracy with KPFA. I would just add, if you're doing that, you should change it in the second sentence in the paragraph two to, because it says employees and representatives of the organizations. You might want to say something about.
Yeah.
/ volunteers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Okay.
So now I get a motion to accept it. Oh, go ahead, Evelyn.
I was going to say, now representatives could be someone like Dan, for instance.
you know, somebody who
right.
represents mm-hmm. Pacifica. Okay.
Right. Employees, exactly, exactly. But I didn't know what to call them.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, do I get unanimous consent to accept this paragraph?
You do. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Evelyn.
Okay. The objectives of the Foundation whistleblower policy are to establish policies and procedures for the submission of concerns regarding questionable accounting or audit matters by employees, directors, officers, and other stakeholders of the organization on a confidential and anonymous basis. The receipt...
I'm sorry, Evelyn, go ahead. I was just saying okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
The receipt, retention, and treatment of complaints received by the organization regarding accounting, internal controls, or auditing matters. The protection of directors, volunteers, and employees reporting concerns from retaliatory action.
Okay. So I'm going to self-correct here. I did this late last night, as you guys could see. In the first paragraph, accounting by, I need to fix that to say paid and unpaid, right?
You might want to carry that same flow that's in the upper.
Right. But believe it, I that's what I tried to do. I tried to do that. Oh, God. I'm trying to do that between doing this and my son is not easy.
This is Tracy with KPFA, and I guess I just suggest that in the third star or the third bullet, that the protecting of...
Tracy?
Yeah. Yeah?
Just hold a second. Let me just fix this.
Sure. Sorry.
Don't be sorry. It's okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Yep. Paid and unpaid employees. Trying to make it easier for students. Directors, officers, and like Ellen said, it carried all the way through. Okay. So what I'll do is I will go through it again, right? And then you guys will take a look at it to make sure I've captured everything rather than taking so long with this. Try to do it bold in different colors for Susan. Okay.
Do a global.
Okay.
Hi, Carolyn here. Yeah, I'm sorry. I disconnected myself and lost the last 2 or 3 minutes. Where are we?
One second. We're on paragraph one of the objectives of the foundation. Did I hear somebody after Evelyn that wanted to make a comment?
I'd like to be on the stack.
You're up.
Pretty straightforward. It's just a suggestion that whatever the wording is that we're carrying into the first bullet, the audit matters by employees, directors, officers, unpaid and unpaid, staff, volunteers, whatever it says, that we use the exact same wording under number 3 and not different wording so that we're protecting all of the people who would be submitting concerns.
Yes.
Just that it carries over exactly.
On the stack, I would suggest, this is Susan, I would suggest that we leave it to Nia to bring consistency to these references because they're going to be throughout this document.
Right.
I agree, yeah. Just that they're the same in each time they come up.
Right.
Yeah, access, that's what we were talking about.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyone else on the stack that wants to add anything aside from those suggestions?
No? Sorry, I point of information. Is this the general policy, the paragraphs headed general?
No. We're done with the objectives.
Okay. Oh, we are.
Could I get unanimous consent to accept the objectives part of this?
No, not from Carolyn, sorry.
Okay.
I have a problem with the inclusion of directors here because this and part of the rest of it seems to abrogate the responsibilities as well as the rights of directors as established in the California Code and the bylaws. It seems to limit them, and I think that there's going to be a legal problem here because It seems to constrict the rights of directors as well as their responsibilities. So I think the easiest thing to do would be just to eliminate directors from the entire document, because they have a separate set of laws. There's a lot of case law on directors' rights and responsibilities with regard to this sort of thing. And this is just another layer of complexity which is going to only make a terrible legal mess.
Okay, so speaking of legal, could I get the permission of the body to send this to Dan Siegel, a corrected version to Dan Siegel, that asks his advice, taking into consideration what Carolyn just said, and then let you guys know how is that?
Because I move approval of that.
Okay. All right.
I think that's a good idea.
I would like to amend that, though. I would ask that any response that Dan gives us be supported by citations from case law, because, as you know, I've had occasion to examine the director's rights very carefully, and Dan and I didn't disagree on this. So I'd like to see whatever opinion he gives us supported by case law and precedents, if there are any.
As you know, Carolyn, and I thank you for your compliment to the in-person PNB, I try to be very thorough as possibly can on this committee, as these folks will tell you. So not your friend. You'll have to tell me where you got it from, okay? So I can allay any fears that you might have about that. Okay? Can we move on?
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, Jack?
Yes.
Jack. Still there, Jack?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Can you do the next two, please?
Sure. Reporting responsibility. Each director, unpaid and paid staff member of the foundation, has an obligation to report in accordance with this whistleblower policy, A, questionable or improper accounting or auditing matters, and B, violations and suspected violations of the foundation's code, hereinafter collectively referred to as concerns.
Okay. Does anybody have a correction there?
Well, at the risk of saying the same thing again, this is redundant because it's covered in California code and the bylaws.
Okay.
Carolyn, are you saying that the entire paragraph is, or just director?
Well, the directors certainly are, and I think that staff members indirectly, I don't know what sort of things they find, but the local board members, yeah, I think directors and maybe local board members, perhaps unpaid and paid staff members are not covered, so that can be left in, but I would suggest not complicating things by redundancies that can then lead to court challenges. I would say the directors were already responsible to do exactly this.
Okay,
John, can I get on the stack, please?
May I get on the stack as well?
Okay. I'm at everybody. Just one sec. Let's just hold it for a second. Carolyn, your suggestion will be carried out throughout this entire document. I will check with Dan Siegel. I will get the different citations, so that is consistent. So let's go through this, and everywhere there's a word director, we all understand on this call that you've empowered me to ask Dan Siegel what is the proper thing to do. Okay? Okay.
Okay, thank you.
That said, let's just deal with everything else, and not the director part of it. Okay, does anybody have something different to say from what I just said?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll be very brief.
I lost track of who was on the stack now.
It's Doc and Lisa.
Okay. Actually, I don't need to be on the stack for this, so you can remove me.
I'll make it quick. I just wanted to say that in this document, I think that having a stated policy relating to whistleblower is really important, and even if it's stated somewhere else and it's in several different places and it's not all pulled together, this would be one document where we could really
have it in front of us, and it won't hopefully be in conflict, and that would be great for Dan to be able to tell us that we're not in conflict with any other policy that's already in place. But I think having it all in one document would really make our lives better, because we didn't have that previously.
Right, and that's exactly my intent for doing this. So can we move to authority of audit committee?
Okay.
Jack?
Authority of audit committee. All reported concerns will be forwarded to the audit committee in accordance with the procedures set forth herein. The audit committee shall be responsible for investigating and making appropriate recommendations to the board of directors with respect to all reported concerns. And that's where the original draft ends. And I suggest adding the following sentence. Nia, is that proper to do that now?
Yes, you may. Go ahead.
Okay. The audit committee may appoint a task force to conduct the investigation. And the reason I suggest that is, for example, tonight we just barely made quorum. And to carry out an investigation may require a series of meetings, and the task force wouldn't be constrained by a quorum requirement, for example.
Okay. This is Tracy from KPFA, if I could be on a stack.
Yeah, you're next, Tracy.
Okay. In response to Jack's suggestion, which I understand the practical implications of it, but I think if you're going to put it in there, there should be some wording regarding how that task force is appointed and who it can and can't consist of, because the audit committee has sort of a track record in terms of who's on it and who they represent and where they come from, and there's geographic diversity and station diversity and so on. And I think maybe the one-liner is a bit too quick. I think there should possibly be some supporting language about a task force composed of something, some sort of guidelines. Because at the moment, it would permit a task force to be composed of really just about anybody. And that may not be in the best services of an investigation if something is hot or controversial in any way. So that would be my concern, and maybe Jack has some ideas, some additional language that might tighten that up a bit.
Jack, I don't have a problem with that friendly suggestion. Does anybody have a problem with that? Okay, Jack. You're the linguist, Jack. What do you come up with?
Well, I have considered this, whether it should be a task force made up of committee members or of members representative of each signal area or something like that. I deliberately left it vague to allow the flexibility, assuming that the committee is representative. There are representatives of every station on it. So I actually couldn't think of a good way to, constrain the formation of the task force to some particular formula. Yeah, I would prefer to leave it vague, so I'm just have to defer to somebody who has a plan here. I don't have a strong objection to doing that, but I don't know exactly what it would be.
Okay.
Madam Chair? May I be on the stack?
You're right.
I kind of support the concerns that I think it was Tracy who raised them. And I was just going to say, because this might be something, and I think in general when we talk about a potential investigation, that there probably needs to be a little bit more language and a little bit more detail given to in terms of how something like that would be done, maybe some certain general things. I think that this is kind of an important issue in terms of who would be on the task force, and especially since we are the audit committee. And one of the things with some local station board members, and I'm not saying this in a negative way at all, but we are in a way getting training on the audit committee and are aware of certain things that some people locally might not be. Maybe this might be something, if I recall, I think one of the proposals that Tony Pohl and them put through was to like give some guidance or something on how something like this could be set up. Maybe we might want to, look into that. But I just think that this is a very good point. I do agree with, you know, the audit committee appointing a task force, but I think some of this, when we talk about task force and investigations, this aspect of it, I think it needs to be fleshed out a bit. And by the way, I think that you did a great job on this, but this is just what comes to my mind. And I offer this very nicely and humbly.
No, I don't take it, Lisa. You should know.
I know. But you know me. I'm the wordsmith. I'm the wordsmith here.
Okay, I'm going to put check with Tony Pohl. P-O-H-L. And then Orlando. Okay, does everybody agree with Lisa? Or does anybody else have anything he or she would like to add?
Yes, Carolyn on the stack, please.
Okay. On this point, Carolyn, go ahead.
Yes, it is. On this paragraph, I'm concerned about the all reported concerns will be forwarded to the audit committee. Again, this is a constraint on the rights of directors to do what they see needs to be done with complaints, and it restricts them to reporting complaints to the audit committee. So I'd like to change the all reported concerns will be forwarded to may be forwarded. Or reported concerns may be forwarded, but I don't think the director should be required to restrict themselves. The law doesn't do that. California Code doesn't do that. The bylaws don't do that, so I don't think the committee can do that. And I think the language should not reflect that constraint on the rights of directors, which are absolute. It's the only place in the California Code that the word absolute is used.
On the stack.
Right, and I think that we should respect that.
On the stack.
Okay, who is that? Susan?
Yeah.
Okay, just 1 second, Susan. So, Carol, let me ask this question. Are we supposed to abide by Sarbanes-Oxley?
I haven't studied Sarbanes-Oxley that closely. I'm more familiar with the California Code. And all I'm saying is that this language restricts the rights of directors to do what they think needs to be done. And I think that that's the problem. So I would like to see directors removed from the entire document. But that being said, we're going through it paragraph by paragraph, so I'm objecting to all concerns will be forwarded. I'm saying all concerns may be forwarded would be preferable language.
Okay. As I preface my conversation by saying that this is how an organization is supposed to run. And I know we have not been doing things that way in the past. However, if this is in contradiction to the California Code, I'll be more than happy to find out, you know, to find out where that is. And I'll bring it back to the committee. So I will put your suggestions in here, okay?
Point of information.
Yeah, go ahead, Lisa.
And this is for the listeners. Does the board of directors ultimately have to approve this document?
Yes,
we do.
Thank you. Okay. And this is a committee that was set up by the board of directors, correct? Or supposedly... Okay, thank you.
This is Doc. I'm
on the stack next.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I didn't know that. Forgive me.
I didn't forget about you, Susan. I was just typing. But go ahead.
I would respectfully ask that the questions about restrictions on directors be noted again briefly, because there is already a commitment to make those changes subject to review by Dan Siegel and Carolyn Burden and with supporting case law. And I'm afraid that we are going to be on this call all night. And I know I will have to get off the call.
Susan, not as long as I'm the chair, you will not have to worry about that.
Thank you.
We have not done that in almost 2 years, and it ain't going to happen tonight, okay?
Got it.
So not to fret.
I have a question, I'm sorry.
Evelyn, yes?
Mm-hmm. Is it possible when we send this forward to Dan, the citation of case law is great, but I would like to know where in conflict we are with California Code by requesting that the information be sent
to the audit committee.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
I made a note of that. Okay. So could Jack move on to no retaliation? Okay,
nope.
Jack.
Sure. No retaliation. This whistleblower policy is intended to encourage and enable directors, paid or unpaid employees, to raise concerns within the organization for investigation and appropriate action. With this goal in mind, no director, paid or unpaid employee who, in good faith, reports a concern shall be subject to retaliation or, in the case of an employee, adverse employment consequences. Moreover, a paid or unpaid employee who retaliates against someone who has reported a concern in good faith is subject to discipline up to and including dismissal from the unpaid position, termination of employment, or removal from the local or national board in accordance with the foundation's bylaws.
Okay, and I know I have to check that about directors, okay? Does anybody have anything different to add, aside from the director step? Done. Okay. Let's see.
This is Stacy from Houston.
Yeah, go ahead, Stacy.
So does this mean that a programmer can, say a programmer gets fired after making a complaint? This covers that? If a programmer makes a complaint about a manager,
yeah,
then under this document, if that manager was to fire or get rid of that programmer, then that programmer then that could be grounds for dismissal of that manager.
Well, that's where I have to be consistent. I have unpaid. That would be an unpaid employee
on the stack.
Correct
on the stack. This is Susan.
And one second, Susan. And then remember, I'm going to carry that through, that language from the first paragraph or second paragraph. I'm getting.
Is that what this means?
Yes.
No.
You cannot. One second. You cannot retaliate against anybody. Retaliation is not acceptable.
So then that general manager, that manager or that program director who retaliated could possibly be fired because of that, according to this rule.
Absolutely. You cannot retaliate. It doesn't matter who you are. You can't retaliate
okay.
somebody.
Please.
Thank you. That's all I know.
I would like to disagree with interpretation and Nia, yours.
Okay.
If the whistleblowing pertains to financial matters, as in this document, then there cannot be a retaliatory firing. If there is a complaint by an employee or whatever, and at some subsequent time there is a dismissal, that is not automatic grounds for dismissal of the supervisor.
Okay, Susan. Who was that? Stacy or Tracy? Was it Stacy?
Stacy.
Okay. When Stacy mentioned complaint, within the context of this document, we are talking about financial complaints. Stacy, were you talking about were you talking about something outside of this financial document that we've been discussing?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't pick that up. When you said complaint, this is just for financial matters.
Got it.
Okay.
This is the background. I got bumped off some kind of way.
Okay.
So, this is C from KPFA. Can I be on the stack at some point on this paragraph?
And
okay,
Carolyn, I'll be back too, please. Thank you.
Okay. Tracy and then Carolyn.
Point of information?
Yes, Lisa?
Sure.
Are we still on the no retaliation part, or are we on the next part?
No, we're still on no retaliation. We're going to be moving
okay.
soon. We have Tracy and Carolyn.
Okay.
This is just a quick thought. So my understanding is correct that this is refined to people who are reporting financial or accounting concerns, period.
That is
so
correct.
that was used to manager is too vague. Okay. The second question or concern, and maybe there's nothing that we can do about this, it's possible, is whether there's a timeline for the definition of retaliation. And again, this may involve certain levels of employment law that I don't understand. But the question would be, how long after an employee makes a financial report, is there a statute of limitations on the period of time under which considered retaliation if, for example, termination were to happen 5 years after a complaint was filed? Is this policy intending, or are we writing it in such a way that it links the two? I guess it's just a question about whether needs to be a little more frame around this or not, or maybe that's not a realistic concern, but I'm just putting it out there. Is there a statute of limitations on the definition of retaliation?
That's an excellent question, which I did not take into consideration, but I'm making a note of it, and I'll check on it. Okay, so I have you checking the statute of limitations for complaints, and I have that under the retaliation section. Okay, very good. I think, Lisa, was that you? Or did I miss somebody?
No.
Is it Lisa? Or Carolyn?
Carolyn? Carolyn on the phone somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead, Carolyn.
Yeah, I'm questioning pretty much in the line of what Tracy was questioning, and that is... The word retaliation, I think that needs to be better defined. And I'm a little bit nervous about promulgating anything from this committee on this issue without the advice of an HR director, because I think we may be getting ourselves in hot water here. But let's say a hypothetical. Let's say someone makes a financial complaint about financial wrongdoing, and an administrator in charge threatens that employee and says, don't talk to anybody about this. Now, is that retaliation? Is that grounds for another complaint by the employee? Is that a hostile workplace complaint? You know, that there's a lot of overlap here, and I think without defining retaliation, and I don't think we can, really, I think we need some HR guidance here. I'm a little bit afraid that this is either too narrow or too broad. I haven't figured out which, but it's just not well defined to me, and I'm uncomfortable with it.
Okay, let me just see if I understand you correctly, Karen. You're saying if the complainant is told by someone that you're not to mention this to anybody, is that considered retaliation? Is it what you just said, or am
well,
I
Well, the,
totally
the threat might be that if you do, you're going to suffer for it one way or the other. You know, be fired or downgraded, or at least I won't like you anymore. So yeah, that's sort of a threat,
okay.
Retaliation.
What you just said right now, that is absolutely a threat, and that should not be said, and that's quite obvious that it's a threat. The person is not supposed to feel threatened in any way, shape, or form. So if we had to investigate something like that, I am quite sure that we would all, on this call, I would hope, say no, this is not acceptable. So that hypothetical is pretty obvious to me. I don't know about anybody else.
This is Jack.
Go ahead, Jack.
I'd just like to say I think the purpose of some of these provisions in the policy is just restating what the law is, but putting it into a context which will be handy as a reference. So when, you know, the provision that there's somebody raising a concern is not subject to retaliation, if you want that more fully articulated, then you would have to refer to a legal source. But I don't think it would be appropriate to try to lay out in detail what constitutes retaliation, especially since that may be changing, you know, it may be evolving over time.